You know what? This is how I believe, okay? I'm from the old school.
All right, welcome to old school.
I didn't think she was going to be on camera. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah, it turns out she is. Yeah. Yeah, we got a new guest on old school who's decidedly not old. That's Josie Mankiewicz, daughter of Ben Mankiewicz.
Yeah. Some quality, she can't stop giggling, look at herself. Quality parenting today.
Yeah.
I left her at after school so long that there was not time to get her back home where there was a babysitter. My wife's out of town. So I just had to bring her here. Uh-huh. No food, no nothing. Uh-huh. So we stopped and we got pizza, and now she's just gonna have to sit through old school well past her bedtime. But she is apparently enjoying it.
Now, it's like take your daughter to work day, which is not today, by the way. And you take your daughter, you're an engineer, you take your daughter to work, and they get bored, but then you give them video games and all that stuff, right? Because, Josie, how old are you?
5.5.
Because they're 5.5, right? They haven't built a bridge before, although they might have built a Lego bridge. So you, when you take them to work, they're on air.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
That's right.
They're right there. Okay. So this ought to be an interesting old school. And this is the one day I wore a kid inappropriate t-shirt from shoptyt.com.
Well, if things get, Joe, things get super grown up, I'm just going to give you the iPad and Craig is going to get you a pair of big headphones and you're going to go sit right over there and watch the iPad, all right? All right.
You remember we used to say on the show earmuff the kids.
That's right, sure. From
old school.
From old school.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, from old school.
We might literally earmuff the kids tonight.
Members can see this live, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So members are watching it live right now. Everything else is super complicated.
Yeah.
No, first half hour is also on YouTube. The first hour is on the podcast. The full hour and a half is on members. So tyt.com/jank to join. Except to become a member,
no,
you get the whole show.
tyt.com/ben, like it's a thing, I guess.
Is it, yeah, no, it's a thing. You're on the board, by the way.
I'm on the board, yeah.
Yeah, somebody signed up before I threw you. You see, your claim to fame right now is you have the highest percentage of people who have signed up as activists. Mm. So the membership is either $4.99, that's insider, okay, because you have to put fun names on it. And activists is $10, okay? So they get extra perks, there are more town halls, their first tickets, et cetera. But also it's, you know, help home of progressives, independent media, et cetera. You have the highest percentage of people who are activists, the $10 members.
Because I have like two of my three or whatever.
So. Wrong, one of your one.
One of my one?
Yeah, you're batting 100%.
So, tyt.com slash Ben for the children.
You might even pass Anna at that rate.
Thanks for helping, Joe. You helped today.
So, and since some of it is a podcast, I'm going to vote for tyt.com/Ben instead of Jenk because you won't be able to spell Jenk.
Mm, so, no, that's right.
Okay. The cavalry has arrived in the form of colored pencils. Okay.
And some paper. Go nuts.
Okay. All right. So today is Kids Day at the Young Turks, accidentally, because I was interviewing Ryan Grimm at Rebel headquarters, and his daughter Sydney came on onto the Skype, and almost the exact situation here.
Remember that guy, that kid who came onto the Skype during that interview?
Yeah, and I referenced it when he did that. I was like, do we pull a BBC or do we acknowledge that your kid's in the...
Yeah, that was really great.
...shot.
So my mood today, the day as we tape this, the day after the midterms, has sort of improved throughout the day. But I was fairly despondent last night.
Oh, that's also interesting.
Yeah.
I'm interested by both things you've said.
I found Florida to be a gut punch to which I was unable to really suitably recover. Mm-hmm. Our experience doing the show yesterday, and we focused on those four races in Virginia, the second, the fifth, the seventh, and the tenth, and and thinking that that was a harbinger. And it kind of was, but it took so long for the results to come out in 2 and 7 that it like didn't feel like it told us anything, because by then we were so down about Florida. As it turned out, it was sort of indicative of how things went in the House.
But by the time we found out, it was no longer harbaging.
It was, the harbaging part had ceased.
Yes.
It had ceased to harbage.
We had a good harbage, as it turned out, but we didn't know it at the
time. We didn't know it, which is the whole point.
Of a harbage.
Of a harbage, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
So I was disconsolate, which reminds me of that great story about soccer, which I'll tell again. And I talked to people who I knew would feel similarly. I called our friend Charlie, and I knew he would feel exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. It seemed like the desire to get an A+, or at least an A, is so overwhelming with this guy. And obviously in his behavior today, Trump's behavior today is indicative of why, but everybody knows why. And we got a B. You cannot call last night better than a B. I had people argue for the B+, but I don't think it was a B+.
It is definitively a B.
It's an 85.
Yeah.
And it's the most B there is.
See, I was leaning towards a B-. I was like, it's either a B or a B-. So I'd come in at 84.
Yeah,
but
all right, well, I'll accept an 84. I'd even accept an 83, the lowest B.
Yeah. No, we got a deal at 84. It was an 84 last night.
Yeah, it's an 84. And
God, that felt good to at least have a deal. And they say that we're not in favor of bipartisan compromise.
Right, that's right.
Okay. In fact, I just wrote a tweet right before the show, an angry tweet, about how Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer better not compromise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, they're eager to reach out. What are you reaching out for?
I don't know. Even with like Cheney, who was a monster. Like, you could have had a conversation and like, hey, I give you more death and destruction and you give me, increased Social Security, whatever. Like, you're having a rational conversation. Even if you think Trump's going to do infrastructure, he's not going to do it your way. He's going to give it to all his cronies and he's not going to be remotely reasonable. You're going to be talking two totally different languages. A deal would be utterly impossible. He'll humiliate you. You'll humiliate yourself. And so what's the point? What are you doing?
Why don't you just take this as an opportunity to defend democracy, right?
Yeah.
We're going to stand up for a free press. We're going to stand up for health care. We're going to fight to get everything that you had in Obamacare back. And then we're going to fix the stuff that we should have fixed in the first place, make it better as we go on the road toward Medicare for all. This leadership is not going to go for that in the Senate or the White House, but we are going to fight for it every step of the way. And every time Donald Trump nominates a conservative justice, we're going to request another tax return.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah, you know, like, yeah. Whatever, it's pick yep. something, you know, but yep. instead, and if they want to make a deal on healthcare, great, but they have shown no indication of it.
There's no deal on healthcare.
Right.
We want Medicare for all. They want to take away coverage for pre-existing conditions. Where's the deal? But right. what are you talking about? Even if you don't want Medicare for all, and you're Nancy Pelosi and you want a public option, what deal? What are you talking? He's not going to make that deal.
Right, you're not going to get a public. I'm saying you could say we're going to start with a public option. We're going to fix Obamacare, but they can't. They will never. It's impossible. You remember, that's why none of them voted for it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So that obviously was distressing. But she's a good fundraiser, and people love that.
Oh yeah, the people out in the heartland, they're like. Ooh, if we could only have a great fundraiser as our leader.
Yeah, that's great. And her speech was inspiring today. I was moved by it. And I like Nancy Pelosi. Like, I get it. There was a time for her type of leadership, right? But it is not now in any way.
I mean, it's amazing. So I was going to say 90s. Anna today on the show said 80s or 70s. Like, they're stuck in a time warp. Who do you think you're dealing with, Bob Dole?
Right, that's right.
Like you think you're gonna get hey, you know, we're gonna do some, you know, we're gonna do, say wife swapping. Be a weird guy to do wife swapping with. Well, I think any wife swapping in Washington would be problematic, or really anywhere else. Okay, but it's up to you. We're libs. Anyway, well, I'm like, you're gonna swap. I assume she doesn't understand what that means. Okay, we're gonna swap like. Oh, you're going to give me more pork barrel projects in Iowa, and in return, I'm going to get something in Connecticut.
Even if it's not, if it's not sinister like that, even if it's legitimate, of which there was a lot.
No, I didn't mean it as sinister.
But I mean,
like, that was old school politics, and there was logic in it. You were going to build a road in Alaska, and I was going to build a library in Rhode Island.
But I'm saying,
right?
Even if it's like, okay, we'll agree to slightly more defense spending, but then you are going to need to shore up a food stamp program, and then right, you know, like there was.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would not. I just, every single thing, I would be like, no. Because the minute you said increase defense spending, what are we, mental?
Why I was saying that's what went on in 1984.
Yeah.
When you could argue at least that there wasn't a, well, I mean, I guess, you know, at least there was an undoubted enemy who was increasing defense spending, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, you know, as we look back on that we could learn very carefully. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. It's very nice.
She's giving you notes on the show.
She is, yeah.
She's like, maybe we do compromise. just and she's. I like the way she slid it in too, like this. Here, come to me.
It says, "Daddy, Tip, O'Neill, and Reagan." It says here.
If she's all right. Maybe we compromise. Okay.
But yeah, this done. There again, it's all about the media and Democrats recognizing what they're dealing with here. And I don't have an answer. I don't know, but I know that you said it perfect. It cannot get said any better than, who do you think you're dealing with, Bob Dole? That's because that's what they think. They were dealing with Bob Dole, and Bob Dole was tough, right? This is a different world. I'm curious. I know I'm going to be disappointed. I'm not going to be disappointed because I expect. I'm a little curious how Senator Mitt Romney behaves.
Oh right, I forgot he's a senator. Now.
Of course, everybody forgot. Right.
That's so funny, / disastrous, / I don't know.
Right.
Right.
But I mean, he's not, it wouldn't have to do much to be better than Orrin Hatch.
Yeah, I mean, super low bar.
Right, but my hunch is he equals it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I mean, he's just going to do whatever he thinks is to his political advantage, and he will think that being massively right-wing is to his political advantage. He'll be a little bit softer on immigration because Utah is softer on immigration.
But what if he thought, I'm going to get into the Senate, and then I'm going to screw that guy. That's a bad guy, and I'm going to hurt him.
Well, that'd be great. But yeah, and I wouldn't put it past him because, you know, he's a spiteful dude.
Right, sure.
And he carries grudges. I can tell, as what he said, he's got grudges, right? So I wouldn't be surprised by that. But I would be surprised because it's not about Trump. It's about his own political career. He cares about his own political career more than he cares about Trump.
So, but let's see. He's not a young man, so he looks great. But, you know, but I mean, imagine if you thought, look, worst case scenario, I spend 6 years as the Republican who attempted to save the Republican Party. There's a good chance that I win again anyway in Utah, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Challenge me. I still might.
No. He doesn't care about the Senate seat at all.
Right.
No, he cares about running for president again. So he will do everything in his power to position himself for president.
Well, maybe that is by being the Republican thorn in Trump's side. It's possible. I mean,
But we always do wishful thinking like that. No, they never do.
I got it. It's been right so far with no one.
That's right.
No one in power. It's been right with plenty of people out of power. You know, former McCain aides. Mm-hmm. Many of them have been great. Right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the only exception you could say is McCain on the healthcare vote.
Yeah, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was like the only time a Republican actually walked a walk rather than talked a talk, right? Mm-hmm. When he came in with the legendary.
Right. Right. Jeff Flake took the first step.
Yeah.
And then ran back the other way.
Now that is Republican 101.
That's right.
But let's keep talking about tomorrow. I mean, yesterday, because it's super interesting.
So, you know, and then I knew that analytically, do we have a number? We don't know yet what the final 37?
No. It's right now. Before I went on air, it was at 27. But I analyzed it. There's 17 that are still tight. They're likely to finish at 33 to 35. They're currently leading in 33.
I saw a 538 prediction at 36. So, I know.
Last night you mentioned 34 on 538.
They were. You know, it was moving as the night went on.
Yeah, so it's constantly moving.
It's constantly moving as they declare.
So if it's at 36, I mean, I really should take a bit of a victory lap. I think I was literally the closest at 38.
I saw something on Twitter today that suggested it might end up at 37, but whatever. So let's say 35, right?
Okay.
Let's pick a number at 35. Here's a forecast here, the leftover from last night at 34 on 538, but it has not been, it was from last night. I knew analytically, especially given where Democrats did well, although that is also full of some peril for the future, because doing well in suburbs and converting some Trump voters will unquestionably fuel the narrative that, oh, well, then let's, that's how we win is going after mm-hmm, those voters, mm-hmm. which is not gonna be with a progressive message for those touting that strategy. But that strategy worked. It worked here. But I knew that there were good signs, that there were areas won back which can be won for Democrats again. Like, you know, that, and it seems most likely that Pennsylvania, there's a good chance Pennsylvania, that was a one-shot deal for the Republicans.
Yeah, that right? they're not going to win Pennsylvania.
And Michigan, right? Wisconsin, mm-hmm. a little trickier. But, you know, the fact is, although it was, I love you, Daddy. Love Josie.
Well, that's very pleasant.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, on an 84 day, that brings it up to an 87.
Is this for me or for Jack?
Okay.
Apparently, it was for me.
Okay.
So in the details was good news, and winning it was not a minor win for the House. It wasn't a blue wave, but it was not a little wave like you could body surf, you know, right?
So Ryan Grimm made a great point today. He said the 2006 thumping that George Bush got, as Bush described it, was 32.
Right, right. So
it was actually, and that was, everybody remembers that as like, whoa, that was a huge election, big swing in favor of the Democrats. So, I mean, it's a little bit about expectations here. So they're going to go.
2002 or 2006?
Six, I believe.
Yeah, because two, Bush averted catastrophe. That's where he.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where he did what Trump did, which was went out, scared people, right? Mm-hmm. Post 9/11. That's where they Max Cleland, you know,
yeah.
suggested that Max Cleland lost three limbs, was working with terrorists.
Yeah, God, you know, you forget how monstrous Bush and Cheney were from time to time.
Yeah. But you know, you were right about Cheney, because Cheney cared about one thing, which was going to war. Like,
yeah.
you know, if you'd said to Cheney, all right, we're gonna give you authorization to go to work in Iran, he would have been like, what does it cost to save Social Security for 200 years? We'll do it.
Yeah,
you know, he's right?
like, I know, like Social Security,
gay marriage,
right. public option,
right,
and $1 trillion for infrastructure.
Right,
we got a deal.
We got a deal. Great.
Right, yeah. He's like, I can't give you Medicare for all, but I'll give you public option.
Yeah, and you'll get it down the road. Of course you
yeah,
will.
Yeah, yeah, you're on your yeah. way. You're
yeah.
on your way.
Yeah, right.
Now, how many people do I get to kill in Iran? See, now that was a guy you could negotiate.
You could make that deal.
Yeah,
and it's a good deal as long as you know weren't in Iran.
Yeah. But you know, isn't that amazing? Because and people get emotional about this. So if you're a right winger, prepare to get triggered. I gave you a trigger warning, to be fair. Okay. So I remember the legendary line that Cheney has said about Iran. Iran, after we invaded Iraq, we actually did scare them a little bit, and they came to the negotiating table and offered us a lot. They were going to stop funding Hezbollah and Hamas, I believe, was part of the deal. And so that's an amazing deal that they should have definitely taken, or at least had the conversation for sure. And Cheney said, we don't negotiate with evil. Now, that's because he wanted to invade Iran, and he didn't want a good deal. He didn't want any deal. But today, I sent the tweet out about what are Schumer and Pelosi gonna do? Meet evil halfway? But the reason I tell you that is you can say, see, Cenk, you're pulling a Cheney. That's not right. You should bipartisan compromise it, right? No, the reality is that Trump is more unreasonable than the Ayatollahs, because the Ayatollahs are businessmen. They're corrupt leaders of a foreign regime, and they have their best interests in mind, and their lackeys and their version of plutocracy and their version of their army and a little bit their people, right? A tiny mm-hmm. bit their people. And they're going to make rational decisions to get to the outcome that they want. Trump is not going to make rational decisions. Trump is just going to try to crush you. Every word he gives you will be completely unreliable. He won't do any of the deals he says he'll do. Like, his irrationality is and unreliability is so much higher than any Ayatollah, almost, right?
Yeah.
That it's even if you thought it was a good idea, it's ephemeral. It's not real. It's you know, like, do you remember when the Democrats went and got Trump to say something that was really positive for the Democrats? It was kind of early on. It was
Schumer and Pelosi did it.
Yeah, Schumer and Pelosi, and he agreed to a deal that made no, like, that was really fairly pretty much on the side of the Democrats, and the Republicans' leadership were like, what did you agree to? Oh, no, don't do that, right? And Pelosi and Schumer were grinning ear to ear, and they were so happy, and I was like, oh, you still don't get this guy.
Yeah.
He's not gonna do that deal.
He
just told you that on that day because you were in the room, and he doesn't know any better, and he thought he was making a deal, and he doesn't know any of the details, and he's a pathological liar. He's gonna turn around the very next day, and of course he did, right?
Yeah, everyone, we don't know how to deal with him, and we don't know how to, and it's not just calling him a liar, like there's this demand that we call lies lies, and I'm for calling lies lies, but I don't know that will, that's important on principle. I don't know that is going to have a terribly, it's going to have an effect that's going to turn people against Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the people who are going to be doing it are the media, mm-hmm. and he's already has you disbelieving them. So again, I don't know what the tactic you're supposed to take with him is. I know that we're now counting the campaign 3.5 years into not knowing, but I don't know what it is. I know you'll be more confident in an answer.
Right, I will be. Whatever the answer is, I will be more confident.
No, but I mean, but your answer will be to take him on headstrong and meet strength with strength.
Oh, you're correct. That is my
answer. I don't know that will work, in part because one thing that we have long, not so much disagreed on, because I don't think you think I'm wrong, but like, only strong people can be strong. And people who aren't strong, who try to be strong, should not try.
Yeah, I hear you. And they're not.
And you can't just have strong people. You can't just say, oh, you're not strong, therefore you're not allowed to be in government. Like, there's mm-hmm. a lot of people whose, that's not a, strength is not their strength, who have a ton to offer.
Yeah, and so I'm going to needlessly clarify one thing. So for the conservatives that are triggered about the Ayatollah comment, I'm not saying that Trump is more evil than the Ayatollahs. I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's more unpredictable. He's irrational. He's like, people have said it before, it's like nailing Jell-O to a wall. Like, he's not going to keep his word. You're having a useless conversation with him.
Because
you'll walk out of the room and he'll change his mind, or he was lying, or he doesn't even think he was lying. Like, he doesn't know what he's saying.
You wouldn't think that it would be a challenge, but it has proven to be a challenge. The key to defeating Trump is to outsmart him. And people are having trouble outsmarting him at this, which is unbelievable.
Man,
right?
Man, that is that. Yeah. If ever we have insulted Washington,
right.
That was it right there. Okay,
yeah.
The good folks in Washington are having trouble outsmarting Donald Trump.
Yeah, his unpredictability has made me. I'm reminded of the wonderful Sidney Pollack film that I love, that you know I love, 3 Days of the Condor.
Mm-hmm.
And when Max von Sydow is trying to kill Robert Redford, Joe Turner in the movie. He, at some point, I don't remember what's conversation with Turner or with Redford or with someone else, that he points out that he was unable to find him because he is an amateur, mm-hmm. and therefore he was unpredictable.
Oh, yeah, well, right. If you've ever played poker, that's exactly right. You know, if you play poker with an amateur, you got to change your game entirely, because like, you'll bluff and they don't know it's a bluff. They're
right.
Like, what do you mean? I had a 7 and a 9, so I called.
Right. And you were like, you were bluffing with a 7 and an 8.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
No, you were supposed to fold, because a 7 and a 9 is not a thing.
Right. Right. And I knew you had nothing.
I knew you had a 7 and a 9. Right. You're like, aha. You're like, what?
That's right. So all this is mine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's how it ended.
Right. Yeah.
So if you learn anything from old school, it's don't bluff an amateur. Let me tell you my take on the election.
So to end it, by the way, 37 right now is what the prediction is.
You
said 38, right?
I said 38.
Yeah. So obviously, it could be 38, but 37 is the most likely. By the way, they only give right now. They're giving McSally a 67% chance of winning.
That's it.
Yeah, right. So I mean, I'm like, okay, great.
All right, all of a sudden we're in the ballgame.
I'll take that, and then we could actually only lose 2 seats.
I remember somebody else had a 67% chance of winning. Her name was Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, it won't work, but McSally will win.
Of course. Yeah. Like in that Virginia when they were deciding who was going to control the assembly, I think, in Virginia, and they drew straws because it was an absolute tie, right?
Yeah, that's right.
We're like, well, everybody knows the Republican's going to win. Well, let's move on with our list. Hey, look, the Republican won.
And I've been following today, but some of my optimism today was restored because I thought there was enough question in Georgia that the vote would end up probably below 50. But that seems unlikely now.
I never had any hope on that, to be honest. And I never had any hope that Kemp could be sued into being reasonable.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, I think like that was, you know, I don't know if stolen is the right word, whatever, right? That he rigged the hell out of that. And she had to beat him by 4 or 5 points to win that thing.
Yeah.
And so it was totally unfair. But, you know, but that unfairness cannot be addressed in hindsight. It had to be addressed earlier, mm-hmm. right? You can't let him run that election. I mean, they should have sued the bejesus out of him a year and a half ago. It's insane that they let him run his own election.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and by the way, guys, look. So we didn't know how bad Kemp was because we don't live in Georgia until you know as the near the end of the election. We, as in people covering it, us specifically, et cetera.
That's why we wanted Ted Cruz to lose more than Brian Kemp because. None of us knew Brian Kemp. We knew from those crazy ads. The other guy's ads were just as crazy, you know. And so we were like Ted Cruz. We knew to hate. Now I know to hate Brian Kemp.
But the people in Georgia, Democrats in Georgia, the dude said that Obama's government had tried to tap into the elections in Georgia in 2016, had tried to like rig the elections. I mean, if that is not a political calculation, the guy belongs in an insane asylum. If it is a political calculation, that guy will do anything, right? So that when he said, yeah, I'm going to stay as Secretary of State running my own election for governor, you sue him immediately and go, no, and bring him to court and you bring the evidence. This lunatic thought Obama had rigged the elections in Georgia in 2016. By the way, they bothered to investigate, and of course Obama had not done no such thing.
Once again, right? the things they accuse us of, we lost Georgia, right?
That should have never been allowed to stand, but that's the thing with Democrats. They allow things to stand that should have never been allowed to stand.
It's the same, because the concept is the same. We talked about it last night. We had that really interesting conversation with Brooke. Here, you know, in the 9 o'clock hour, I think, last night, just that, like, you know, the how the media is taught to deal with lies is to you know, they print it and they'll something. The Washington Post has come up with this thing where they get to call a lie, you know, chart the lies, the lie meter. But Democrats also like he made it up, right? And then we don't quite know how we're supposed to respond to it. Right?
Yeah.
They take it like, well, he said that this had happened.
No, and that's because they live in the 1990s and they think they're dealing with Bob Dole and all that stuff. So here's how they should have dealt with Kemp back in the day. They should have said, this guy's a lunatic, conspiracy theorist. He should be removed from office and at a bare minimum sued to make sure that he does not run the elections. But Democrats don't roll that way. We were talking to Kemp and we were negotiating with him, but he decided not to negotiate. He decided that he would just do whatever he wants, so we surrendered, right? And then when you surrender, and then your candidate a year and a half later loses by about 2 points, and in a race where she might have actually won by 2 points, oops. Well, what are you gonna do? Oh, there's no paper trail, by the way. Well, that's why you should have done something about it a year and a half ago. So they're maddening.
Sorry.
Okay.
You gotta watch this. There we go.
Okay, we're earmuffing the kids.
Yeah. There you go, put that like
we're
that.
We're literally earmuffing the kids, okay.
Too loud or good? All right, fantastic, there we go. Underway, watch this.
Okay, was it the wife swapping? Is that what it was?
Totally, yeah.
Okay. Kids don't know that, right?
Yeah. No.
Okay. So anyway, look, I'll tell you the parts of the election that both bothered me and were great. Okay, so I didn't notice till still late because I had kind of assumed that he was going to win. And I looked around and I was like, oh no, Richard Cordray lost.
Right, yeah. I didn't.
Jesus, why did he lose?
Right, I was like, I heard him say Mike DeWine won. And I for a second thought, I wonder if that guy's Mike DeWine's brother. You know, like I thought.
And I thought.
I thought, oh, Mike DeWine's brother is running for a House seat in Idaho.
No, that's right. Really funny because I heard Mike DeWine won and I thought, was he running for some other office?
Right.
Secretary of State. I couldn't believe that Richard Cordray had lost.
Right. And of course, I knew he was running against Mike DeWine. It just, that's how we're at. It was so, such a, again, yeah. This moment of where we're that far out of touch.
Yeah, I think we've lost Ohio, by the way. I mean, as much as we were going to regain Pennsylvania, Michigan, and I believe Wisconsin, no, Ohio's gone.
Well, but again, it may be, and Florida may be too. And Florida is definitely a red state. It's not, I mean, it is not fully red, and it's obviously winnable. If you lose by 1 point, it's mm-hmm. winnable. But elect national offices in Florida, Republicans are dominating them, right?
Yeah, I got it. Look, it wasn't a political trick. It was really because it's the right thing to do, and it's freedom, and what the country stands for, et cetera. But if you're doing a real political analysis of those 1.4 million votes, people who will be able to vote in Florida now because of the ballot measure, where the felons who mm-hmm. That have regained their freedom can vote, Florida is back in play.
I hope so. I mean, we don't really know who those people are.
We don't, and of course, a lot of them are white. I'm kidding. A lot of them will vote Republican. Of course, this is not a. Right. What do you think? All felons are Democrats, and you don't know what they were arrested for.
Yeah.
And there's an opioid crisis.
Most of them won't vote.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
They're felons.
Okay. And there's a billion assumptions both ways on that and stuff. But at the end of the day, if you ask me to guess, my guess is that they would vote more likely to vote Democratic, and I'll tell you why.
Thank goodness.
Oh, okay. Wow. That YouTube, bye-bye. That went by quick. I guess I'll tell the other guys why. No. Because they have lived life a little bit. If you remember, Duke Cunningham got out of prison. And this happens all the time to Republicans and CEOs. Like, they go to prison, they come out. They're like, did you know how bad prison is? Like, that's like crazy. We do that to people. We put them in, and then you have no freedom.
Yeah, like
you can't even go get a steak.
Every night they lock the door to your room.
Right. Yeah. And they come out like so-called reformed, and then it takes a little while.
Duke Cunningham came out reformed?
No, they say that stuff until it takes them a couple more years to go back to being a dick. And so she's earmuffed. It's okay. Even if you went to prison as a Republican, when you come out, my guess is that for a sizable percentage of you, that you'll have developed some degree of empathy, right? And realize, oh, there is the man, right? Does that, putting kidding aside, nothing to do with race, like, yeah, power crushes things in front of it. And so I think that creates people who are more empathetic and more likely to vote Democratic. But anyway, so no, and Florida, come on, they lost by a point. No, it's definitely a play. And a lot of Puerto Ricans went there.
But it is we have more work to do than Republicans do to win in Florida.
Yeah, but Ohio's, but on the other hand, so this is gonna get into the biggest thing, but Sherrod Brown.
That's what Michael Shorts was, the point I just wanted to make, that it hurts his brain, and it reflects well on him that it does. That still you have an election day, and there are people who voted for Sherrod Brown and Mike DeWine.
Yeah.
And then 2000, the example he always uses, Al Gore won Pennsylvania and Rick Santorum was elected to the United States Senate in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was gonna say. And not just note the irony of, hey, Sherrod Brown's very progressive and Ohio just made him senator on the same day that they made Mike DeWine, who's very conservative, governor. And guys, it is not an active decision. It's not that, like, hey, you know what? I believe the correct balance of power is to have someone slightly more conservative in the governor position because they're in the executive role there. And I believe the Senate should go be balanced out by a progressive. No, none of that. So, I think I solved it because it was driving me crazy. Like, you had consternation and then it got better. I had consternation at not the results, but at the mystery, okay? And I think that I'm pretty close to solving it. So, and it's gonna touch on Sherrod Brown and DeWine in a second. But so because there was great parts of the night. Kris Kobach lost and Scott Walker lost. and we picked up, you know, 37 seats, et cetera, right? So
in a gerrymandered world.
And I'll tell you, the most heartening part of the night was Kobach losing. It gave me tremendous peace of mind, not just because of Kobach, but because I was like, oh, whew. I was actually worried that there was some percentage chance, there was an 11% chance they were rigging the elections.
Right, that's right.
And if anybody was going to rig an election, the two candidates are clearly Kobach and Kemp, okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Kobach obviously did not rig his election because he lost. And I was like, oh, thank God they're not rigged. Oh, thank God they're not rigged, right? I mean, I had Kobach at significant power ranking number one to rig an election. So that gave me more confidence in democracy in the rest of the elections, not just about Kansas. So I felt, and it made me feel good that I could dismiss the 11% conspiracy theory
in
my head.
But I mean, that's an example of how horrible things have gotten, though. I mean, that counts as a victory.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
I don't trust them at all.
You've set the bar very low, understandably. But
yeah. So, but you know, the Brown DeWine thing happens in a lot of elections, like your point about 2000. But what I couldn't wrap my head around is two parts, and I explained at the top of the Young Turk show today. Well, one is you win the House convincingly, you lose the Senate convincingly. That's super weird. Okay, and then. The establishment Democrats got routed, especially in the Senate, but the progressive Democrats also lost.
Yeah.
Right? So James Thompson lost, Kara Eastman lost, Katie Porter lost. I was really surprised by that. She lost by 4 in California. I thought for sure she was going to win.
Yeah, I thought she'd win too.
Right. So I'm like, what? The rules of the universe seem to have been suspended. I'm confused, right?
Yeah.
So I think this is how I put it together. First of all, I noticed that the progressives lost by significantly lower margins. There was exceptions, like Randy Brice. Randy Brice lost by 13. What? How did he lose by 13? That's crazy.
He needed to run against Paul Ryan. I mean, he still might have lost, but I think that was
yeah,
sort of what
I
that
guess.
Was predicated
I guess
on.
They were tied to Paul Ryan, and that's why Brice was polling so well against him.
Yeah.
And they just wanted a generic Republican because it's still a Republican district. I guess. Anyway, but most of the progressives, Porter, Eastman, they actually did great in red districts and lost by 4. When you let that settle in, you go, oh, actually, that does make sense. They just didn't quite have enough to get over the hump, et cetera. Whereas Donnelly and McCaskill way underperformed in the polling, right?
And Bredesen.
And Bredesen, thank you. I kept forgetting Bredesen. And Heidkamp, and they all underperformed, okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, Heidkamp sort of performed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. She actually wound up exactly where the polling was, that's right.
But still lost by 10.
Yeah, and Tester, it seems like he pulled it out. And it's because my theory is because he runs against corruption. That's smart.
Yeah,
and right. That's his number one issue.
He has we talk about this a lot. Tester has a little political magic. Like
Tester's. You know why? Because he's a little bit of a populist.
That's right. Yeah, he's definitely a little bit of a populist, and he has a little bit of the things that people attribute to Trump that he doesn't actually have.
You know, right.
Tester's a tough guy who says what's on his mind and doesn't seem like a politician.
Yeah, exactly right. He looks like a real person.
He's very much a politician.
Yeah. You know who's the luckiest person in America? Stabenow. Yeah. Like, I don't think Debbie Stabenow is a great, even a good politician. She just keeps accidentally winning in Michigan.
She must have a. They must. She has a solid. They have solid. Yeah. Like they know how to get out the vote there in Michigan.
Yeah, bless their hearts. Anyway, no beef with her. She's just an incredibly standard politician. But Ben, we don't have a megaphone. Since we don't have a megaphone, and all the elections are now nationalized, and Ryan Grimm made a very similar point afterwards.
I think you overstate that.
I really don't. So people who are on Team Republican want to stay on Team Republican, especially when not only Trump but Fox News like riles them up nonstop every day. Like, the Democrats are coming.
I got you. But as you know, how many people watch Fox?
I know, but they have outsized influence. I mean, it's when we go to the Trump rallies, right? They only watch Fox, and they're believe everything Fox says and they believe everything else is all lies.
This is a semantic argument because I don't think you think it's entirely nationalized, and I agree that it's way more nationalized than it used to. So continue.
Okay, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Okay, we have another deal.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So and so he Ryan was saying, look, Jess King is in a really interesting place, and she and when you do the polling, they're like, oh, I really like Jess King. I like Medicare for All. I like the things that she's talking about. I like higher wages. Lloyd Smucker, I don't trust him. He's a standard politician. I think he's a little corrupt. I don't like him. Right? The polling indicates that. Yeah. Right? Not Ryan like putting his finger to the wind. And then, but at the end of the day, she lost because it's a Republican district.
Right. So, and that, but also that just needs to enter into your analysis of the Senate too. I mean, again, the you know, and I was listening on NPR last night as I was driving home, and they were like, "Look, the Republicans were playing a home game, like, and they're great at home." You know, and
well, that's
and,
a good way of putting it.
So, you know, it's a little unfair to just count. It's definitely unfair to just count the votes accumulated for the Senate, but Democrats got way more. Like, I think more than 10 million more. Granted, every vote in California was for a Democrat, so you can't really, doesn't seem like you should be able to count Feinstein
that's
and Delia.
That's an interesting
Okay, so take 2 million away, just right off the bat there. Mm-hmm. But it still was such a sizable number more. So now I got it, and we ran a lot of races where we dominated in blue states. But they won the red states, I mean, which are smaller. So it is, again, not a reflection necessarily that then we take this, here's where you can't nationalize it. The elections themselves might be nationalized, but the fact is a majority of American people who went to the polls in a huge turnout election did vote for Democrats for the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. And yet Republicans gained seats because of the peculiar way that we have decided to run our government.
Yeah, so, but now back to the megaphone and the difference that it makes. So, what was disappointing to me about the election the most was we should have turned out more than them, that we were excited to beat Trump. That if any election the Democrats should have had an advantage in voter turnout, it was this one.
Yeah.
And it appeared not to materialize because the Republicans are always energized. But that goes to what I was saying before the election, that Trump, you know, in his atrocious, terrible way, et cetera, but man, does he energize his base.
It's always true. It's certainly true, was true here.
Yeah, and he has a giant, giant megaphone. So, and the Democrats have no megaphone.
No.
And if they had one, they'd just throw it on the ground and bury it and
Nancy Pelosi looking down to read a quote from Ronald Reagan. That's how we use our megaphone.
Right. So
we had a little debate last night when just we were all frustrated, but the, you know, Trump, who's at 42, 43, 44, somewhere that's way too high, right? And whatever it is, whether it's 42, 43, or 44, it's 43.6 now. I bet it goes up a little bit because the perception of the midterm will be that he did well, right? And that, that whatever the number is, it doesn't matter because 99% of the 42 is into it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if somebody had called at any point during the Obama presidency and polled me and said, do you approve of the job performance of the president? I would have said yes. Not because I approved of the job performance of the president, because I wouldn't have been interested in that number going down because it hurts the narrative. Then that's instantly used as a cudgel against him. But I had this conversation today with a bunch of Democrats with the point was that we were like, well, yeah, but we were not 99%. Even when we approved, it was like, yeah, I approved because I personally seems great, you know, and he's very smart, and I do think he means well, and he's getting his ass kicked by the other side.
So
like that would not have motivated. I will always be motivated, but that just wouldn't have. Meanwhile, these guys think he's the Messiah and is the only one telling him the truth about the dangerous caravan.
Yeah, and so, but that's kind of literal because it's the white evangelicals that are carrying him. It's unreal how much. I'm really looking forward to the exact exit polling that comes out about this election in that regard. And now that I think about it, the states that they did really well have a lot of white evangelicals for the Senate races. Man, for you know North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, right? Tennessee, I mean, filled with white evangelicals. And so amazing stat, and also from another Ryan Grimm story. Man, Ryan's good. God, he's such a great reporter.
You should get him to work here.
Mission accomplished.
That's great news.
So, and he explained that if you take out white evangelicals from Donald Trump's vote in 2016, Hillary Clinton actually won white men.
Is that right?
Yeah, if you take out, now white evangelicals is a huge chunk of white men.
You can't take them out.
You can't take them out, but if you do, if you take, she won white men. That's amazing. I'm shocked by that. So for non-evangelicals,
right?
Even like the core of Trump's base, white men, are like, nope, I like Hillary Clinton better than I like Donald Trump.
So we should, the next time that every time that there's a narrative, oh, the Democrats, they just think they got the black vote sewn up, we'll be like, yeah, you have the white evangelical male vote sewn up.
That's right. That's 100% right. It's like, they have all these, and so that's going to get into my point even more. And hashtag sorry Anna, but it's the day after the election.
The day after the midterms. Right? Come on,
it's an obvious old school exception to not talking too much about politics. So, the conservatives are used to running roughshod over liberals because on TV they don't allow strong liberals. It might be overstating it a little, but not by much.
I don't know whether it's that they. It's funny. Now I feel so much clarity now in the way you and I have discourse. Like, it's not that they don't allow strong liberals. That's part of it. It's also that the very nature of going into that circumstances is a strength zapper. Like, it is not conducive to that, or at least to that. They don't want it.
No, that's exactly. Yeah, right. 100% agreed. So you just soften the way I say it is
that's
to
right,
me.
Yeah. But there is something about television itself. I mean, it happens when you try to, when it's happened when Bill Simmons has the great, great podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And he had great success with his podcast, the BS Report, right? And if you care about sports and gambling and sort of talking about sports, combining truly thoughtful analysis with the same dumb things that interested you when you were 13.
Yeah.
Like he did it. He perfectly blended it. He's really smart and really good. And HBO was like, so we're going to spend a gazillion dollars and we're going to put it on TV.
Uh-huh.
And they ruined it. They ruined the essence of what it was.
That's why when people, if we send, and very rarely we have sent clips of this, demos of old school to TV executives, and they're like, no, you guys are not wearing the proper things. You're not having the proper conversations. They're like, this is madness.
Right, this is not TV.
Right? This is not even Sparta.
They insist on too many lights. Right. I mean, I don't even like the lights we have here for this. But there were 15 cameras there for the thing.
Yeah.
And the fact is, if you were gonna put the BS report on television, if it was gonna work anywhere,
it should have been done out of a basement.
Should have been done out of a basement, and he could still wear a baseball cap, and there's a camera on him and a couple other cameras around, and it's dark, and there's some stuff hanging on the walls, and they shave or don't shave, and sometimes their kid shows up,
Yeah, but TV cannot help but overproduce.
That's right, yeah.
And so when you overproduce, this is a good collabo we got going, Ben. Okay, we're about to unveil an excellent theory. Okay, because when you overproduce, you cannot abide by strong opinions from the left. So the right wing, we've just gotten accustomed to it. And they're you are playing that role. Producer is picking basically actors for the play that they're going to unveil that night. Now, you might think that that's an obnoxious way of looking at it, but that is the way that cable news looks at it. And so in that play, strong right wing actors make sense. Strong left-wing actors seem Reeve gauche. So they seem hey, let's bring it down.
Right, they seem out of control. Part of it's just the rightward drift of the country that's sort of saying things that 20 years ago would have seemed like, that guy's nuts.
Yeah.
He just said he was a white nationalist, and everyone's like, well, what does it really mean? Like, I know what that means. I know what that means.
Yeah. He said he's a Nazi.
Right, exactly.
What does that really mean, though?
Even short of that, you were just allowed to espouse Limbaugh, really extreme, massively out of touch, incompetently run ideas, if those ideas actually became the law of the land. And they worked on it, though. They were out there for 20 years first before those guys started showing up on TV, right?
Yeah, totally. And look, guys, think about it this way, right? And this is the kind of partly the debate I had at the National Press Club. So are there anybody who, anybody on TV from Occupy, from the Occupy movement?
No, those guys.
And the answer is an obvious no. Like why? No, we wouldn't. They would think, a producer would think, well, I'm not going to put a bum on TV.
Right.
Because that's their group thing. They think, oh, if you're on the left and you don't like the system, you're a bum.
Right, but nobody from the Tea Party got on either.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but okay. They couldn't wait to put people from the Tea Party.
Of course, of course. Yeah. Sean Hannity promoted, and Glenn Beck promoted Tea Party rallies nightly on Fox News, right? So if I went on MSNBC and I was like, okay, the next Occupy Party is, movement is happening here. We're going to go to McPherson Park in Washington, D.C., and we're going to occupy the park and make sure that, resist the police. They'd be like, no, out of the building. Get him out of the building. Get him out of the building. I mean, I did a lot less, and they escorted me out of the building, right? So that's an uneven playing field. And so in that situation, we got nobody fighting for us. And so one side energizes their base, the other side cannot. Their leaders are terrible. The TV's rigged against them. And by the way, I know what's gonna happen, and I might help make it happen, but I know how this movie ends. This movie ends with the left exploding. And what I mean by that is not violence, I don't mean physical. I mean like somebody's gonna rise up on the left who's gonna say, fuck this. She's got earmuffs on. Okay.
Can we take a wide shot just for a sec? Did you hear that?
What?
Did you hear what we just said?
No.
All right.
Hey, all right. Mission accomplished. By the way, I got a little nervous there. So that's so cute. All right. God bless. And somebody's going to say, to hell with this.
Yeah.
And they're going to come out on fire, and they're going to change the dynamic. And by the way, I think I might have found the guy. And so it's my new favorite dude. And yeah, he lost last night. Okay.
You think Richard Ojeda is going to
hold? So, mm-hmm. So tomorrow I'm going to do a segment on this. Gina just sent me, I don't know if you know this. So Emma Vigeland was going to go to cover Beto O'Rourke, mm-hmm. right? So she's our main reporter on the ground, and Eric Beiler, who's our main cameraman editor on the East Coast, was going to go cover Ben Jealous because we're very progressive, just Democrat, etc. And then Emma got violently ill, and so she couldn't make it. It happens, right? And I was going to say she's okay now, except I don't know. She is right. Okay, good. Oh, thanks God.
Next time that this situation presents itself, just go with. Sick. She got sick.
I know.
I think she would prefer it. I think everybody would prefer it.
Emma's in New York and not in the building. So anyway, we're like, she was going to go cover Beto, but we like reach out to Beto's campaign and they're like, yeah, whatevs. Like a lot of people are covering us. Okay. And it was like that kind of attitude. And I was like, nah, the dude does not abide by that. Okay, so if you're interested in us giving you coverage, we're super happy to do it. We love helping progressives, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're not interested in the coverage and you got others, and Beto had a million people there. He doesn't need us. So I was like, no, forget it. We're not going to Beto. We're going to Ojeda, right? But since Emma was sick, we're like, what do we do? And I was like, no, pull Beiler from Jealous. Send him to West Virginia. We got to cover Ojeda, okay? Now, we're the only people in the country, and we were, of course, the only press there. Mm. And like, we got to cover Ojeda. And God damn it, we were right. He gives a fiery his concession speech, okay? He comes out, and it's a nice, he's like,
How much did he lose by?
I think he lost by 13-2. Mm. Yeah, because it was a 49 district plus 49 for Trump. He lost by 13. So you could argue he made up 36 points, yeah. Okay? So Trump had gone to campaign against him, but look at how much they were afraid of him. And they sent Trump to campaign against Ojeda. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Okay. And he called him a wacko and all this stuff. So Ojeda, instead of giving a concession speech, comes up and goes, I want to address this to Donald Trump. I'm like, fuck, damn it, I love this guy. Okay. And he says, and he came down here and he supported this person who's corrupt. I don't remember all of it, obviously. But anyway, and then he calls me a wacko, and then he can't even say my name right. my name is Richard Ojeda. And then, like, the room both gets, like, quiet and electric at the same time, right? And then he did something I didn't expect. He repeated it. He's like, my name is Richard Ojeda. My name is Richard Ojeda. And I was like, oh, God damn it, man, this guy's awesome. And then he ends it with, sappers lead the way, Air Force all the way. And I was like, no, that's it, this is the guy. This is the guy, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm taking him to Iowa. I don't know, but I'm taking him somewhere, man. I don't know. I think I know the national scene better than, I'm positive I know it better than he does. And he's got that thing. It's a thing, it's real, right? Like, if Bernie wasn't running, I would go headlock Richard Ojeda and Nina Turner immediately and go, guys, it's go time.
Well, I tell
you, but mask over your head, get in the van, old school style. It's go time.
Well, I tell you what, though, because let's think a little more realistically. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm Shelley Moore Capito, mm-hmm. 2020.
Like, oh, that's a no-brainer. I mean,
well, let's run for Senate. Let's win that seat.
No, Capito, you're
Caputo.
Yeah, yeah, you're Caputo. Look, here's what happened to you. You just don't know it. That's the exploding heart trick. 2 years later, your political career is over.
Because I mean, if first of all, they won't run anybody meaningful against her, and if they do, it'll be the one Democratic member of the Charleston Chamber of Commerce, right?
You know? No, it won't.
Right.
And the guy who's will run against her, his name is Richard Ojeda. So I don't look, president's crazy talking, yada, blah, blah. But there's going to be a guy like Ojeda.
Right, but that kind of right. Like, I had this discussion today with our friend Charlie, and today, like, I got it. Joe Manchin, it's not super clear. John Tester hung on and won, mm-hmm. and Joe Manchin won, right? But both of those guys, Tester more than Manchin, but they have personality. Right, they have a thing. Manchin does. Manchin frustrates us, but he is not dissimilar from the thing you want in general attitudinally.
Yeah, that's right. He has a little bit of force of character.
That's right. And so, like, I don't believe it will work, and so I don't think there's any point in it. But the Evan Bayh's and the Joe Donnellys of the world, guys who had significant leads, certainly Evan Bayh had a huge lead before 2016, and Donnelly had a lead and was a 7-8 favorite to win, 538 thought based on the dynamics of the race, and he got swamped. And Phil Bredesen, they're not all the same, but they end up being these sort of, they are Republican light, they are, to use completely co-opt your language, they are as typical a politician as there is. What struck me most about Joe Donnelly's horrendous final ad, which would have been a very effective ad for a Republican running for Senate in 1992, really, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Would have been a solid ad, invoked Reagan, showed a little bit of willingness to understanding the common man on healthcare, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But basically supports the cops, wants to keep foreigners out of the country, and loves mm-hmm. Reagan, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And hates socialists, right?
Yeah, and notice what Ben said. Would have been a good ad for a Republican.
A Republican in 1992. Now it would have been insufficient for a Republican, but it was not an ad for any kind of Democrat ever. That those guys just, but what struck me about him was even his clothes. Like, you know, I make fun of the hair too much, but it's the thing you talk about. It's the stand. I am very confident Joe Donnelly owned none of the things that we saw. Like mm-hmm. that leather jacket and that shirt were picked because they thought it made him look like an everyman, and all of it screamed, from his hair to his words, everything screamed, I am a untrustworthy politician.
So there's this fairly unacceptable song in Turkey that got popular about a decade ago, and it says, what happened to the old stone oven man, okay? What happened to that old stone oven man? You've become a one-calorie Diet Coke man,
right.
Okay? And so the other parts of the song are so unacceptable, I don't really want to talk about them, right? Okay, but that's what Donnelly and those guys are. They're one-calorie Diet Coke guys, okay? They're fake, they're artificial, they're soft. Like, man, I'd love to run against a Donnelly. If somebody said, okay, all right, Cenk, you're going to enter your political career, pick an opponent like Joe Donnelly. Mm-hmm. Okay, Joe Donnelly, there's no way that guy wins.
So,
and by the way, if you don't know, like if you're thinking, but wait a minute, guys, that's not fair. He's a senator. He must have won at some point. Yeah, he did. He got lucky. He got handed that seat because the Republican running against him last time, it was a suicide bomber. He self-imploded. He came in. I forget. He wasn't Aiken. It was the other guy. And he did some sort of rape thing, too. And he's like, ah, what's the big deal about rape? Boom. So Donnelly was handed the seat. And
so,
yeah.
So why not? You know, and I say this from the, you know, I'm the sellout, middle of the road establishment Democrat, right? We all know that. Like, let's go through two cycles where we lose with Richard Ojeda.
Yes.
You know?
But and, we will not.
Okay, right, that's obviously. Right. So, what's the worst case scenario?
That's right. What's the worst case scenario? You're going to lose Indiana?
You risk nothing.
I got news for you.
Right. Shelly-Ann Capito is a 99% chance to get reelected in 2020.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. That's the convention.
So, after this old school episode, it dropped to 42%.
Right. Like, let's go get her. Let's go get her. Talk tough. I got it. He's not. He doesn't even agree with us on everything. Close to it, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
But he will fight. And I would. And there's a guy like that.
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry.
And there's a guy like that somewhere in Indiana too, who can run in 2022.
So that's the line I forgot. Before he got to the "I am Richard Ojeda" stuff, he said instead of doing a concession speech, he said, I got news for you. I'm not done fighting. I was like, yeah, there you go. I don't know if you guys know this. His name is Richard Ojeda.
Also, you know, he's in the West Virginia State Senate, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not.
Yeah, he's a
he's a politician.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
he's
a political figure. Yeah, right. It's not like he does not get elected, right? And so, all right. But bottom line is, this is the pressure is building on the left, and we have no voice, and we have been systematically shut out. Unwittingly, like the mainstream press, they have no idea. When I gave that speech to the National Press Club, they were like, what? Like, you think we're biased against the left? Like, they've never heard that in their lives. And, you know, look, I talked to some politicians. They've never heard any of the things that we've said in their lives. And so, like, Washington has never, like, and so it's not just Washington. Just to finish the thought, and then we'll do a couple minutes of some time of non-political stuff. So, so that guy in Ohio, to come all the way back around to that, he doesn't know what Sherrod Brown's positions are that much. He doesn't know what Mike DeWine's positions are that much. He just has heard of Sherrod Brown. He's heard of Mike DeWine. And they reached him. They reached him through paid media. They reached him through free media. They reached him, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of reaching them. It's not like Mike DeWine and Richard Cordray sat in everybody's living room, had an exhaustive conversation and debate, and at the end, the people of Ohio stood up from their kitchen table and said, Mike DeWine. No, Richard Cordray never made it into a lot of people's kitchens. And by the way, DeWine didn't either, right? And so they reached some people, they didn't reach other people. It's about how you reach them.
DeWine, way more famous in Ohio by a factor of 20, probably. I mean, he'd been a senator and,
Yeah. And so, and hold on, we're about to send off my good friends on the podcast. So here's what you're gonna miss. What is the difference between how you doing, brother, and good to see you, brother Ben?
Oh, and the world. So I look forward to that. Look forward to that conversation.
Okay, so if you want to get the whole show, tyt.com/join normally, or in this case, tyt.com/Ben. That gets you membership either way.
For the kids. I'm reminded in the point you're making that you made to the National Press Club of, again, I want to quote him. I want to quote him as often as possible. Here's who the National Press Club did have on shows. And I mean, here's who they would understand has been on shows. And here's what the mainstream media would love to have on shows if he weren't dead. Gore Vidal, right? Public intellectual, right? And so I'm going to repeat this quote on every show we go on because this quote is really for Cenk. Right. Asked by David Susskind in 1980, does someone as sophisticated as you submit yourself to the conspiracy theory of history? And Vidal responds, I say they don't have to conspire because they all think alike. The president of General Motors and the president of Chase Manhattan Bank really are not going to disagree much on anything, nor would the editor of the New York Times disagree with them. They all tend to think quite alike. Otherwise, they would not be in those jobs. Gore Vidal read the New York Times, and I'm sure liked the New York Times, right? He's not saying that they're crazy conservatives. He's not saying, he's just saying there is a manner of thinking, a way you think when you are in these powerful positions that you don't have to conspire. You don't have to have a conversation to say, make sure you don't let anyone from Occupy Wall Street in here. Right?
That's right.
100%. They don't have to. It just doesn't. It doesn't occur to them.
It doesn't occur to them.
Right.
Exactly right. And so I can go on and on about that. I'll tell you now. Let's transition to fun stuff. So Gore Vidal lived in L.A. and I actually had the good fortune of interviewing him once, although he didn't come into the studio. We did it on the phone before he passed away. But I wish I had more time and I was savvy enough back then to have spent more time with him because. And I wish I had more time now to spend with Norman Lear, because since we have a show and it's progressive and it's popular, even then it was popular enough, like we would get to talk to these guys. And so Norman Lear afterwards, like, yeah, let's hang out. And so we went and had breakfast together and stuff. And how great would it have been to have been friends with Gore Vidal and Norman Lear and go to breakfast with them every once in a while?
Totally, yeah.
And so, God, I mean, Norman,
Gore Vidal on many talk shows, like, you were like, that guy is a tremendous ass.
Yeah. He could be insufferable.
He could be insufferable. But
right. But he was indifferent than me, though. But he was allowed on TV because he was soft-spoken. He was insufferable in an arrogant kind of way.
Oh, my God.
Whereas I'm insufferable in a brutish kind of way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and brutish is not on the left, not allowed.
Right, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and so, anyways. So isn't that all the difference in the world? Like, how you doing, brother? To good to see you, brother Ben.
How you doing, brother? Is totally acceptable. I mean, my wife and I discuss. She doesn't like I say boss. She was giving me a hard time about boss
because
I said to a waiter, like, all right, thanks, boss. You know, when he brought me in.
Yeah, people call me boss often, actually.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they know.
I like boss. I like chief. I do.
Chief is fun.
Yeah, I don't really use chief anymore, but I used it for a while, and you start using it, and then it stops being a thing you're trying to use.
That's what happened with me with brother.
Right.
I think I said in an episode of Old School, like many years ago, I like how Desmond on Law says brother.
Brother.
Right? Brother. I'm like, that's a thing that I'd want to do. Like, that's, I think that feels cool. I
met Sonia Walger, I think is how we say her last name. She played Penny.
Oh, yeah, she's lovely.
Oh, she's lovely. She couldn't be lovelier.
Yeah.
Lovely, yeah.
And so I started dabbling with brother, and I started dipping my toe in, and then I got into it, and then I forgot I got into it, and now I just say it all the time.
Right.
And I say to people that I've known for 40 years that I, in fact, like, it'll sometimes, I'll be like, so I'm talking to Dave, and I'll see you later, brother. And he'll be like, like, give me a look.
Dave,
like,
obviously would, yeah.
Right. Like, he's like, what's with the brother thing?
Yeah, no, but I like it. Oh, now I'll do it to Dave too.
Yeah.
I think, because I've said it and I like it, but you know, it's sort of, it's a little like wearing a hat. I don't mean a cap, but anybody can wear a baseball cap, but I mean a hat.
Yeah, a little bit.
So you say it, and like, you know, I've bought like 3 hats in my life. I've tried. I like hats. I like when I see men in hats. I like to wear a real hat, right? Uh-huh. And then, but whenever I wear a hat and show up somewhere, it's the only topic of conversation, and it's all negative, and it's instant. Like, I walk into a room, like, imagine I walk into a room, I'm wearing a hat, and Michael Shore goes, what's happening?
What's happening?
What's happening? What's going on here? Right. Or they just laugh like Craig is laughing now. Yeah. Right?
No.
I can't.
Here's who can't do hats, me.
That's right, no, you can't wear a hat. I can't wear a hat.
Yeah, so it's just, and so, And I love Sister. Sister's even better. And you know what? People love Sister. Okay. But the tricky part is with black folks. Okay. So sometimes I'll be talking to someone black, and I'll be like, "I'll see you later, brother." And I'm like, "Wait, was that okay?"
I think you just got to bear through it. They don't care.
I know. I don't think they care.
Yeah.
But Sister is where it gets dicey. So that's why I brought it up.
Yeah. I don't think I can do Sister. I can do brother. I have done brother. I like brother. It's in the same. I like boss. I like chief. I like brother. But the difference between, I mean, you go ahead. Say your greeting again. Each one of them. Say, give me a.
Okay.
Change.
Yeah. I'll see you later, brother.
All right, man. See you later.
Okay. Even that, I Desmond that up a little bit.
Yeah.
Actually, I did. See you later, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the other one is, good to see you, brother Ben.
Yeah.
No, that guy's crazy.
Yeah, that guy's
no, you don't. That guy's either Cornel West or crazy?
Or you know, you put it as a question like you know, hey, do you have a second brother?
Like, yeah, that's great. Right, that's perfect.
Right.
Perfect usage of brother.
Right. Do you have a second brother? Yeah, sure. Sure. And then ask it the other way.
Do you have a second brother, Ben?
Oh, you know what? My kid needs to get to sleep, and I got to run. I got to run. But we will talk later, Brother Cenk.
So if you haven't heard Cornel West says brother, and he says it in an awesome way. Mm-hmm. So he'd be like, Brother Cenk, let me tell you something. And I'm like, oh, I'm all ears. What do you got? Right? But anyone else, like, Brother Cenk, it is good to see you.
No, it isn't.
I can't wait to leave.
I gotta go. Because it's, once again, your example of like, look, there's no black men in America are at a tremendous disadvantage, right? With the years of institutional racism and Jim Crow and, you know, and you can't drive, you can't walk through a department store, but you can say brother, and you can wear a hat.
And
it looks great. It's one of the few.
Yeah, Jacory's wearing a hat right now.
Yeah, Jacory's wearing a hat, right? Nobody would, you know why? It looks great.
No one even noticed, because they're like, oh, well, so of course.
There are two large groups of people who can wear hats, and they are black men and artists.
Oh, artists. Yeah,
good. A musician.
Like, you know, somebody, you almost have to wear a hat.
No, if you walk in and you play guitar, wear a hat all day. Wear any hat you want. You can have 10 hats.
Yeah, no. If I see a guy like in an old school hat, like Jacory's got like a longshoreman's hat kind of thing, but like more fun one.
Jacory could wear any hat that is made. Jacory could put it on his head, he'd look great.
You have carte blanche, Jacory. Yeah. We wouldn't even notice. We'd be like, Jacory obviously is wearing a fun, interesting hat.
Right.
Not even noteworthy.
Right.
Okay. But if I see a guy in like a white guy in an old school hat, I'm like, hey, so what instrument do you play in your jazz band?
No, totally, right? And if you don't, then I'm going to give the greeting that Michael would give to me. What's going on here? What's happening? What are you doing? What are you doing? What's happening?
So white people saying,
I could turn myself into a guy who wears hats, but I would have to wear the hat like 100 times before finally people would be like, all right, I guess Ben's one of the four non-musicians who gets the one white non-musician gets to wear a hat.
That's great.
And I'm sure people, the first couple times you said brother, but then after a while, after 60, 70 uses, then it's okay.
That's right. And on white people saying Brother Cenk, let's see if we can agree on a percentage. I've got it at 24% chance that they're in a cult.
Oh, no.
Higher,
no,
right?
Much higher.
Yeah. 76?
Yeah, I think 76% chance they are in or have or are in the process of extricating themselves from a cult.
I like that little narrow.
Yeah.
We were at 74, like, but we got 2% extricating themselves.
Can I talk to you for a minute, Brother Cenk?
I
desperately need your help.
Oh, yeah, come on. All
right, please give this note to my parents.
So now back to sister. When I use it with white women, I'm like, really appreciate that, sister, or whatever. I don't care. I'm not using it well, but you get it.
And I hear. Great to see you. Great to see you too, sister. Got it. Something like that. Yeah. It's very casual.
Yeah, and I'm not thinking about it anymore because I say it all the time. It's just become part of my lexicon. And white women, on average, 71% of them are like, oh, okay.
Right.
and since I do it naturally, I'm not thinking about it. I use it with black women too, because I use it with everybody, right? And every time there's a little hesitation, like, wait, are we cool? Like, or are you trying too hard? Are you one of those guys? Like, power to you, sister.
Josie, can you hear me? Josie, can you hear me? Okay, good. So the Josie, can you hear me?
That's a new thing in old school.
Josie, can you hear me?
Okay, that's a new thing in old school. Josie, can you hear me?
Josie, can you hear me?
Okay.
So Josie says, "Sister," to refer to her dolls, her little, and so she's like, "Sister, sister, come here," and then the babysitter she'll refer to as a sister. Uh-huh. I find it incredibly spooky.
That ain't right. Bless her heart. Okay. So Joy wakes up every morning. Joy's about the same age as Josie. And she's got a thing. I don't know how it developed, but it's now everybody knows it. And so, you know, they don't call me dad, they call me Baba, right? So she'll scream at the top of her lungs, "Baba, change me." Like Pearl roll his eyes. "The Baba, change me." And she won't stop until I go upstairs and change. The random Joy story.
Change your clothes or change?
Change your clothes. She's in pajamas.
Right.
She needs to get ready for school.
She gets to get ready for school.
And then we have a tradition. I pick the clothes. She says no. She'll never say yes on the first one, even if it's the one she wants to wear.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's true. I give up and I go, okay, Joy, you pick the. She's like, hmm.
Right. Josie, too. What dress do you think I should wear? I don't know. This one's nice. No.
No, apparently that's the thing with daughters.
Yeah. Nope. Yep. Not going to wear that one.
Okay, so I got more. So after our talk about the little pan and the frying and this stuff, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not your greatest conversation, but all right. Yeah.
Okay, the next day I had a steak, half-eaten steak quesadilla that I had eaten before old school, right? And in the morning I was like, I got that half a steak quesadilla in the fridge.
Can't put it in the microwave, it'll ruin it.
Right, and I was like, the little pan. Let's go for it, right? And I did, and I pressed it down.
Flipped it over.
Oh yeah. Flipped it over a couple times.
What did you cook it? Did you put anything on the pan?
I thought about it, and I was really at 50-50. So my memory of it is also at 50-50. If I did, I put a little bit of butter, but I might not have because it's already so greasy. Okay, so I got it nice and pressed, and then I was like, "Hold, we're not done."
Uh oh, did you do it?
The Mankiewicz egg on top.
No, okay. It's delicious, right?
Yeah, it was America. So I have this thing now where, like, when things are great, I think America, and then I realized, like, I reflected that I was doing that, and something Donald Trump has ever done, reflected, right? And I realized, wow, I really. My jingoism is a little bit real. Like, I actually really do love this country. And it's got a lot of room to improve, and we're trying, brother. Right? We're trying to get it better, right? But at my core, I do love it. Like, because when I think of good things, I think America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as I was eating it, I was thinking, America, America, America.
I don't know that I would think that. I mean, the problem is Donald Trump has ruined that a little bit.
Yeah, no, fuck him. Yeah. No, we're gonna take it back. We're taking America back, and we're gonna make it great again.
Do you think like Ryan Reynolds, like looks in his fridge and he's like, "Oh wait, I got a leftover quesadilla from somewhere, and I'm gonna put and he makes a fried egg, and then he sprinkles just a little glistening of real maple syrup on it, right? Takes a bite, it's delicious, it's exactly what he wants, and do you think he goes, Canada.
I don't, maybe, but I doubt it.
I doubt it.
No, America's a thing. America's a thing, right? So, like, there's great, great parts of Turkey, like the ruins, the gorgeous waters, although you know you got issues with the country when you begin with, the best thing about it is the ruins. Like, the things that are ruined in that country are amazing.
They're amazing, yeah.
Right? Anyway, no, seriously, ruins, water, the food, et cetera. But no, I don't think it's me. I genuinely think it's no one that goes, Turkey.
Right, yeah.
Right? Well,
if there is anybody, it's your dad. Yeah. Turkey.
No, I don't think he does, yeah. My dad's not that kind of guy anyway. So anyway, it worked. I'm happy to report that it worked.
Okay.
And then I thought about doing it the other day again, and I was like, no, that was way too much work. Okay, so I was about to look up the next note, and I hit, so there's, Twitter has this notification thing that if anyone else with a blue check retweets or likes a tweet of yours,
it shows it
on your phone.
Sure, you can get that.
Which I think is super neat. So, because it'll be like random people, like the other day, Jon Favreau liked the tweet of mine, and you know.
I'm surprised at that based on the history that you have with Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
Like you played poker together.
No, the other Jon Favreau.
Oh, right. Because the Jon Favreau, the actor, director.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to retweet you.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. No, no. But it'll be random actors. And Belinda Carlisle retweets me from time to time.
She's got the beat.
She's apparently got my beat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, appreciate it, sister.
No, that's great. Yeah.
And so
Belinda Carlisle is married to one of my brother's great friends from when he went to elementary school back in Los Angeles in the late 50s, early 60s.
So Twitter is a insane asylum, right? And it's a maelstrom of hate and fear and disgust, right? But it really does have this really significant upside that is not talked about enough because it's so filled with hatred and madness that you like forget about it. But like, I've never met Belinda Carlisle. We probably will never have a conversation. Gary Shandling retweeted me every once in a while before he died, and I never got a chance to meet him.
Yeah.
But he apparently knew me enough that he liked some of the stuff I did and sent it. I loved the stuff that he did. And we had this little like invisible interaction
Twitter. Yeah, that's right.
And where else would we have had
that interaction? I've had many through the movie stuff. There are so many people I meet at these festivals and they'll be like, oh, I didn't know you guys know each other. And it'll be, well, we don't really, but we've communicated on Twitter.
Yeah, And in fact—
Oh, you know, Sarah Silverman, who I've met at events, and I don't think if she could walk by me on the street, she would have no recollection at all. I want to make that supremely clear.
You know, Sarah Silverman used to date someone in the Young Turks Network.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I'll tell you who that is in a second.
So I interviewed her at the Mel Brooks, got the AFI Life Achievement Award. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, Sarah, Ben Mank was from TCM. She's like, oh my God, you know, we know each other. And I was like, no, we've never met, believe me, I would be aware. And she's like, oh, Twitter, right? I'm like, yeah, I retweet you. She goes, oh, well, thanks. but she did, that connected it for her, you know.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know if this is a humble brag. I don't think so because I'm just saying it rather than hiding it. But Judd Apatow, very rarely, but sometimes will retweet me or like me or something. But the reason I bring it up in this case is that, so I saw him one day in front of a restaurant. We were going to dinner. Remember Dan Hamilton was in town? Mm-hmm. Anyway, and I was like, hey, Judd, it's Cenk Uygur. And he's like, oh, hey, man, how you doing?
Right, yeah, that's all from Twitter.
It's
just Twitter, yeah.
And we'd never met. He didn't know me. I didn't know him. But I know of him, obviously. And so at least Twitter allowed for that to happen. And I'm like, I mean, you know what? Twitter doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, I just
that.
Remember the other conversation I had with Sarah Silverman, where she didn't, it was after another event, and we were sort of stuck outside together. But she made no attempt to do the celebrity, like, runaway thing. Like, she actually engaged in the conversation. And again, all because of Twitter. It was, like, acceptable.
And let's be honest.
And also, I think she's actually would appear to be an extremely kind person.
And that, you say so. Like that, okay, that's apparently a part of it.
Yeah.
Okay. But the other thing that Twitter does is it blue checked you.
That's right. Yeah.
She doesn't have to run away because you're not likely to be a lunatic. Although on Twitter, there's some blue checks that are lunatics.
Right.
But
giving those things out. I'm one of the worst part. So TCM got involved whatever 5 years ago or so to help me get blue checked. Right. When it was still hard, it was harder, I guess, to do.
Yeah.
And it really, as soon as I, you know, somebody would say you got to get, you know, you're the host of TCM, you should get one. I'm like, how to do it? And I don't really want to actively seek it. Right.
Yeah.
So I called TCM and I was like, look, it would probably be helpful, but I don't know what to do. And then, of course, I should have done it earlier. And the publicity people were like, yeah, we're on it, right? Mm-hmm. And so then I got a thing from Twitter. They're like, fill this out. And then an hour and a half later, I had it, right? Mm-hmm. And I called Michael Schur to say, hey, just want to let you know, I got a blue check. And he's like, I just got one too.
And that ruined it.
Ruined it completely. I'm still pissed off about it. I beat him to a blue check by like 3 hours.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that doesn't
count. Just a waste. Yeah.
Yeah. That you had to at least savor that for 3 months.
Yeah, come on.
And you could have ribbed him the whole time.
Yeah.
I was gonna reply to you, but you didn't have a blue check, so I didn't know if you were the real Michael Schur. Right. So. Right. Anyway. So.
I'm like, how'd you get blue check? Because I'm like an M to ass. He goes, I have no idea.
That's even worse.
It's worse. They just decided he was important enough.
Right, and you had to apply. Oh, that's embarrassing.
I know. Oh my God, I don't even like telling the story. It's humiliating.
Okay, so I checked to get my notes, and so it showed me who liked my last tweet, which was, you know, the one about meeting evil halfway and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. It's been lighting up the entire time we've been doing the show. And how do we feel about this? Liked by Goy Division slash Jew Order.
Goy Division slash Jew Order?
Yeah, is that like Bear Jew and cool, or is that anti?
I think you got to investigate.
Yeah. I don't want to.
I don't.
It's
no.
Twitter. You don't want to go into the wrong room.
No, right. You don't. But I guess. I'm going to guess it's not. It's definitely not good. Like
really?
Even if they're on the right side, then easy.
So yeah. No. Yeah. No. You cannot say Jew Order if you're not Jewish.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I. There might be right wingers who might disagree, but I think that I'm in the top 4% of Jew lovers.
So who's
the country, right? But I'm not allowed to write that I'm part of the Jew Order.
No.
You see what I'm saying?
No, definitely not. The I don't even think I'm allowed to write that I'm part of the Jew Order.
No, of course you are.
Well, I'm going to do it then. Fantastic. There's a. She was just on this show on the damage report this week, the day before the election. Alyssa Milano. Did you follow the fight regarding Alyssa Milano today?
No.
So I'm going to screw up some of the names, so I apologize for the pronunciations because I haven't talked about them. But so there's a women's march coming or a women's something coming, right?
Okay, yeah, I think so, yeah. Right?
And it's not a march, it's like a some women's. And anyway, I just learned all this today. And so Alyssa Milano said she won't speak at the march unless Linda
Sarsour
and Tamika Moore, who started the Me Too movement, maybe. I hope.
Oh, okay, that sounds right.
And I might have her name wrong, and apologies on that. But unless they renounce Louis Farrakhan, because I guess somehow Farrakhan and his, I guess because three people have talked to me about it. So Farrakhan, every now and then, you know, I mean, he's like this horrible, rabid anti-Semite, and then there's a demand that people renounce him. He's powerless, right? So it's not that relevant, right? Mm-hmm. But whatever.
Just renounce him.
Just renounce him.
He's a dick. I don't know why he's still hanging around.
He's a lunatic, right?
Yeah. Just go away. Go away.
He's a lunatic, right? Not everybody who's in the Nation of Islam is, but he is. And so I saw the other Michael Cohen, who wrote American Maelstrom. He tweeted, "Hey, good for Alyssa Milano to sort of demand that some on the left just say, hey, enough with your anti-Semitism, Louis Farrakhan." Mm. And then Glenn Greenwald was like, "Oh, great! So a white woman says she won't go to a march unless the Palestinian woman and the black woman agree to attend on exactly her terms." And I was like, "Twitter."
Right. I like that. From now on, when crazy stuff happens in the real world, we'll be like Twitter.
Like four people who basically want essentially the exact same world. I've decided to all just fight over. And the source of the argument is a crazy anti-Semite.
It's like now in the real world, if like somebody knocks over somebody's water while getting up, and it was kind of tight quarters in a restaurant, and then the person says, "Oh, I'm sorry," but the other one doesn't accept his apology, and then they start raising their voice, "I'm just going to come by and go Twitter.
It's because somebody knocked over the water and be like, "I'm sorry," and they'd be like, "I'm not going to accept your apology until you renounce Louis Farrakhan."
Really, we're having a conversation about Farrakhan.
Jesus Christ, man.
All right, anyway, so I got to tell you these two things before I run out of time. In fact, I've already forgotten one. Sarah Silverman dated Kyle Kulinski.
I was going to be my guess.
Yeah, I'm kidding. No, he's way too young. No way.
Oh, yeah, of course.
No, Sam Cedar.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Sam Cedar and her used to know each other from back in the day in the comedy world and dated for quite some time. Interesting fact.
I couldn't possibly be more into Sarah Silverman.
I thought you were going to say Sam Cedar.
No. Hey, Joe, can you wave goodbye? We're done. We're out of time. Take the headsets off. Say something like goodbye, everybody. Hit pause, yeah. So say goodbye, everybody. All right, great. Cool.
All right,
terrific. Great.
See you later, sister.
All right.
All right, guys. Much love. ShopTYT.com. That's our sponsor. See you next time.
Peace.
In the Middle East.
Good job, Joe.